we're not anti-American. But we see we are anti or against what America is doing wrong in other parts of the world as well as here.
Malcolm X is one of the reasons I'm here. He helped to inform my voice. Malcolm X was the first black man that I saw, read, listened to, who spoke truth to power.
It is impossible for an American to understand the ins and outs of the Iraqis and understand how to run the country. It will create a disaster in the future.
When people think about bombing Iraq, they see a picture in their heads of Saddam Hussein. But guess what? More than half of Iraq, 24 million people, are children under the age of 15.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Friday, February 21st, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Iraqi vice president is offering to have a dialogue with the United States. In an interview broadcast today, Taha Yasmin Ramadan said his country is ready to talk if Washington abandons aggression and ceases interference in internal affairs. He said, quote, "We are for a dialogue and normal relations with all the countries of the world except for Israel," unquote. In the interview with Al-Shabaab Television, owned by Saddam Hussein's son, Odiah, Ramadan also accused the United States of trying to dominate the world, saying Iraq cannot accept that. He appealed to Arab countries to come to Iraq's defense, saying they were Washington's next targets. Iraqi opposition groups living in the U.S. and working with the Bush administration are reacting today to reports surfacing that the Pentagon's plans for post-Saddam Iraq do not include opposition groups in ruling the country. A front-page article in the Washington Post says the Bush administration's plans to take complete unilateral control of Iraq and install a yet-to-be-named civilian to lead the country after a period of military rule run by General Tommy Franks. During an interview today with Peace Watch, Intifad Kambar of the Iraqi National Congress says installing an American military government in Iraq would be disastrous in the future.
I don't think this is a plan that is finalized by the U.S. government. However, some agencies in the U.S. government are interested to declare victory and declare their ideas are prevailing too early and too definitely that is not going to happen. The U.S. government has no interest in creating such a situation that is not wise and number two is not workable, and it may create a chaos in the Iraqi government. The Iraqi people are not dead. They are not toothless people. They are creative people. This is the oldest civilization. Baghdad is 6 million in population. It is impossible for an American to understand the ins and outs of the Iraqis and understand how to run the country. It will create a disaster in the future.
Actually, I'm reading an article that says other opposition members say a U.S. military government in Iraq could be a stabilizing force in the early days after an attack, but that the United States should take a more discreet role once security has been restored. Is that a scenario that you would perhaps agree to? Or do you
the scenario which we like to have, we don't want to do things discreetly. Our plans are very transparent. Our association and alliance with the United States is something we are proud to have. What we want to have is an interim government which will be declared on as soon as we have a foothold on Iraqi liberated soil, and this interim government will run the matters of the Iraqi land and continue the sovereignty of the Iraqis on their own land. But this interim government will work closely with the United States, and military presence in Iraq will be helpful to this interim government to maintain the sovereignty of Iraq and the integrity of Iraq. But the interim government should not be replaced by all means by any Americans to rule Iraq.
Well, does your organization, the Iraqi National Congress, still have any input into this decision and to these plans in terms of, are you still in communication with the White House? Is there any chance that your concerns are being heard and will be respected?
We are in communication with the White House numerous times a day, not a month, not a week. We are present now in northern Iraq on Iraqi soil. We are leading the events now, and the operational work after the combat operations will start. We will have a big role in it to help our allies in the United States to liberate Iraq and establish democracy. Our ideas has been, the INC's platform has been the platform of the future of Iraq, and any reasonable solution for the future Iraq would have to come based on the platform of the INC, which is establishing democracy, a federal state, and a pluralistic state.
Well, it sounds like your group is at odds with what the administration is moving ahead with, full speed ahead.
Well, this is not the administration. This is part of the administration. This is the same parts which have been opposing removal of Saddam for years. Now Saddam is about to remove. They want to conspire against the democratic change in Iraq. They want to keep Iraq a dictatorship as much as possible, and they are appeasing by doing so, but they are appeasing countries and dictatorships surrounding Iraq who are pushing this agenda against the will of the Iraqi people. We are not going to accept anything but full democracy in Iraq. And removing Saddam from power only without establishing democracy will not satisfy the will of the Iraqi people.
Well, how are you going to have your concerns paid attention to in a serious way? I mean, the war plans are underway.
The decision making in Iraq will be led and will be dictated by what is going to happen and not by what is going to happen in Washington.
So you're saying you have control of northern Iraq through
It's not a matter of control. It's a matter of Iraqis will dictate the events like any country in the world. Iraqis are a very viable people and very active people, very smart and intellectual and educated people. They will have a huge role in the future of Iraq. The reason they have no role now inside Iraq because of Saddam, but if Saddam is going to go and the wall of fear is going to go, you will see different type of Iraqis from what you see today.
So at this point, Mr. Kambart, do you still support the idea of an invasion into Iraq?
I support the idea of war of liberation in coordination with us. And this is exactly the fine line between what is invasion and what is war of liberation. In order to make this a war of liberation, in order to make this war a war for Iraqis, not against Iraqis, it has to end in a way that Iraqis should continue their sovereignty on their own land, and there should not be allowed any vacuum in the sovereignty.
Well, it sounds like you're just almost saying that unless the administration changes this post-Saddam plan, that things could go quite differently in northern Iraq.
Again, you're using the word administration. It is not the administration. It is some parts in the administration.
Well, what parts in the administration?
The State Department and the CIA. But that's not me and the whole administration agreeing on this issue. And I don't think this issue has been finalized within the administration.
So you still hold out hope that President Bush and the cabinet will respond to your concerns?
Well, I think the Iraqi people will always prevail. Remember, these two agencies that I just mentioned wanted the Iraqi opposition conference in December last year to be limited in number. We refused, and we made it an open conference. They also refused that we should go to northern Iraq and have a meeting. Now we went to northern Iraq. We are there. We are establishing a front command post for the Iraqi National Congress there. We are not doing things against America. We are doing things in favor of our people, away from decisions made by bureaucrats that have little understanding of what's going on inside Iraq.
So do you, in your plan, in your scenario of what a post-Saddam Iraq should look like, is there a key individual that you think should be put into place?
This is going to be like the purpose of the meeting in northern Iraq now, which is going to happen, and by the way, will be attended by a delegation from the U.S. government at the highest level, will be to choose a leadership for the Iraqi opposition, which will have the power to form a transitional government at the right place and at the right time, but not now.
Intifad Kambar of the Iraqi National Congress. Today marks the anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X on February 21st, 1965. After coming back from his trips to the African countries in 1964, Malcolm X changed his name to Alhaj Malik El-Shabazz. Al-Shabaab said that his mission to Africa was to internationalize the African-American struggle, to make the links and bonds that bind those in Africa and those in the diaspora strong, to emphasize that there is only one struggle. In his last speech recorded January 7, 1965, just 1 month before his assassination, Malcolm X speaks out clearly against American aggression around the world.
During the few moments that we have, we're going to have a little chat, like brothers and sisters and friends, and probably enemies too, about the prospect for peace or prospect for freedom. Actually, you can't separate peace from freedom. Throughout the colonialists and their lackeys, and then united with Tanganyika into what is now known as the Republic of Tanzania, which is progress indeed. I was there, one of the most beautiful countries and the best people that I was with. My good friend Abdurrahman Mohamed Babu was one of the architects of the revolution, and I find him to be a most highly enlightened human being and a humanitarian and a lover of freedom. Also in 1964, the oppressed people in the South Vietnam area and that entire Southeast Asia area were successful in fighting off the agents of imperialism. All the king's horses and all the king's men haven't enabled them to put North and South Vietnam back together again. Rice farmers, peasants with a rifle and all the weapons of warfare, highly mechanized, jets, napalm, battleships, everything else. And they can't put those rice farmers back where they want them. Somebody is waking up. In the Congo also, the People's Republic of the Congo, headquartered at Stanleyville, fought the war for freedom against Shombi, who was an agent of Western imperialism. And by Western imperialism, I mean that which is headquartered in the United States, in the State Department. In 1964, this government, subsidizing Shombi, the murderer of Lumumba, and Shombi's mercenaries, hired killers from South Africa, along with the former colonial power, Belgium, dropped paratroopers on the people of the Congo, used Cubans that they had trained to drop bombs on the people of the Congo with American-made planes, to no avail. The struggle is still going on, and America's man, Shombi, is still losing. All of this in 1964. Now, in speaking like this, it doesn't mean that I'm anti-American. I'm not. I'm not anti-American or un-American. And I'm not saying that to defend myself, because if I was that, I'd have a right to be that after what America has done to us. This government should be lucky that our people aren't anti-American. They should get down on your hands and knees every morning and thank God that 22 million black people have not become anti-American. Because if anybody has a right to be anti-American, we have. You've given us every right to. And the whole world would side with us if we became anti-American. You know, that's something to think about. But we're not anti-American. But we see we are anti or against what America is doing wrong in other parts of the world as well as here. And what she did in the Congo in 1964 is wrong. It's criminal. Criminal. And what she did to the American public to get the American public to go along with it is criminal. What she's doing in South Vietnam is criminal. She's causing American soldiers to be murdered every day, killed every day, die every day for no reason at all. That's wrong. Now, you're not supposed to be so blind with patriotism that you can't face reality. Wrong is wrong no matter who does it or who says it. Now, if I'm anti-American for saying that, then Wayne Morris is anti-American. Church, senator from somewhere out there is anti-American. A whole lot of them in Washington, D.C. is anti-American. So I'm just telling you what I read the good senators said. Also in 1964, China exploded her bomb, which was a scientific breakthrough for the oppressed people in China who suffered for a long time. I, for one, was very happy to hear that the great people of China were able to display their advanced knowledge of science to the point where a country that is so backward, as this country keeps saying, and so, you know, behind everybody and so poor, could come up with an atomic bomb. Why, I had to marvel at that. It made me realize that poor people can do it as well as rich people. So all of these little advances were made by oppressed people in other parts of the world during 1964. These were tangible gains. And the reason that they were able to make these gains, they realized that power was the magic word. Power against power. Power in defense of freedom is greater than power in behalf of tyranny and oppression. Because power, real power, comes from conviction. And it produces action, uncompromising action. It also produces insurrection against oppression. This is the only way you end oppression, with power. Power never takes a back step, only in the face of more power. Power doesn't back up in the face of a smile, or in the face of a prayer, or in the face of some kind of non-violent, loving action. Power, it's not the nature of power to back up in the face of anything but some more power. And this is what the people have realized in Southeast Asia, in the Congo, in Cuba, in other parts of the world, that power recognizes only power. And all of them who realize this have made gains. Now, here in America, it's different. When you compare our strides in 1964 with strides that have been made forward by people elsewhere all over the world, only then can you appreciate the great double cross experienced by black people here in America in 1964.
El Haj Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X.
Weep in your head. Don't you know we've been took. Don't you know we've been talking about my tits, they were taken from the ballots of bullets. Speech of Malcolm X, he said, we've been had. No, we've been took. Don't you know we've been Italy? We've been don't you know we've been this late? Don't you know we've been this late?
Been misled. Bernice Johnson Regan, Sweet Honey in Iraq. Today, more than 10 public and private high schools in the Washington, D.C. area walked out of school to demonstrate, or rather high school students, walked out of school to demonstrate their opposition to possible U.S. war in Iraq. Ingrid Drake was there and files this report.
Youth are the roots. Let us live and don't recruit. Youth are the roots. Let us live and don't recruit.
Nearly 300 high school and junior high students marched to the White House in the Capitol today for a rally with other anti-war activists. For most of the participating schools, there has not been a student walkout in generations. Many of the students were surprised by how many youth participated.
My name is Sophie Corporan, and I'm 16, from D.C., go to Edmund Burke School. We just decided that we were going to have a walkout to march against the war on Iraq, or the possible war on Iraq, and there's a lot of people here. I thought it was just going to be mostly upperclassmen, but there's a lot of people.
Emily Sager, a 15-year-old from Washington, D.C., spoke about the provision in the No Child Left Behind Act that is provoking student protest across the country.
I'm out here protesting against the idea that the government is being able to use school, like school naming and listings, to find out who they can recruit for the war, because that's just completely wrong. And since most of the population isn't even supporting the war, they shouldn't be able to take free information just because they want to.
How does it feel to be here today?
It's really impressive, actually. I didn't know how well that all the schools came together and organized this, but I think it's really amazing that just students, this is completely organized by students, and there's so many of us here. And it was, like, all organized. Like, the schools know, everyone was into it, and everyone, like, is really supportive and coming out and showing that they care.
There's only one truth, and it's that the youth has got the power. Bring peace to the streets all over the world. This is our hour.
Could you all please describe for me what your flag looks like?
This is the Earth, and inside of it are two babies, the United States and Iraq. We're all people.
Resistance is fertile.
Right, what is your name and your age?
Lauren Green. I'm age 19.
From D.C.?
Yeah.
My name is Gora Madan. I'm 17 years old, and I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland. We have the banner of Montgomery County Students for Peace and Justice, and it's a Montgomery County coalition of about 15 high schools in the county. And we are opposed to the war in Iraq, and that was the reason we were formed, to oppose this war. And the banner has a fist, peace dove, and a scale for justice.
Not in anybody's name! This is not going to happen!
I think it's historic about this gathering here right now.
It's high school students leading each other. We organized it ourselves, and we carried it out ourselves. So I think that's pretty big landmark. Like, college students have a history of organizing, but high school students haven't before.
Today, the anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X, student Rodney Wilson evoked the memory of Malcolm X.
No Iraqi ever called me a nigger. I won't fight your white man war. Free the people. Historically, a lot of the people who have been recruited for wars like this are African Americans and those who are impoverished.
What would Malcolm X think about what's going on here today?
I think he would say we're fighting, like, the correct fight, like, where we don't want war. And I think he'd say it's all good.
I think Malcolm X didn't believe in violence, and he think that we're taking away our freedom.
While most of the demonstrators were under 18, some as young as 13, they are already planning on how they will vote in the 2004 election.
Most of us here, I'm assuming, will be ready to vote in 2004. I'd like George Bush to know that we won't vote for him in 2004 if he keeps supporting this war.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Ingrid Drake.
In the push for popular support of a war in Iraq, Washington has often employed emotive appeals based on making the world safe for, quote, our children. Resistance to this language has given rise to a diverse and multi-generational coalition that sees direct parallels between, quote, our children and all children of the world. Last week, an American peace activist, just 12 years old, addressed 150 people at the St. Mary's Church in Aroostook County, Maine. Here is the speech that Charlotte Allenbron read at that event.
When people think about bombing Iraq, they see a picture in their heads of Saddam Hussein in a military uniform, or maybe soldiers with big black mustaches carrying guns, or the mosaic of George Bush on the lobby floor of the Al Rashid Hotel with the word criminal. But guess what? More than half of Iraq's 24 million people are children under the age of 15. That's 12 million kids. Kids like me. Kids who are pretty much like me, just the same. So take a look at me. A good, long look. Because I am what you should see in your head when you think about bombing Iraq. I am what you are going to destroy. If I am lucky, I will be killed instantly. Like the 300 children murdered by your smart bombs in a Baghdad bomb shelter on February 16th. 1991. The blast caused a fire so intense that it flash burned outlines of those children and their mothers on the walls. You can still peel strips of blackened skin, souvenirs of your victory, from the stones. But maybe I won't be lucky, and I'll die slowly, like 14-year-old Ali Faisal, who right now is on the death ward of the Baghdad Children's Hospital. He has malignant lymphoma. caused by the depleted uranium in your Gulf War missiles. Or maybe I will die painfully and needlessly, like 18-month-old Mustafa, whose vital organs are being devoured by sandfly parasites. I know it's hard to believe, but Mustafa could be totally cured with just $25 worth of medicine. But there is none of this medicine because of your sanctions. Or maybe I will be orphaned, like Ali, who was 3 when you killed his father in the Gulf War. Ali scraped at the dirt covering his father's grave every day for 3 years, calling out to him, "It's all right, Daddy. You can come out now. The men who put you here have gone away." Well, Ali, you're wrong. It looks like those men are coming back. Imagine that these are your children or neighbors. Imagine your son screaming from the agony of a severed limb, but you can't do anything to ease the pain. Imagine your daughter crying out from under the rubble of a collapsed building, but you can't get to her. Imagine your children wandering the streets, hungry and alone, after having watched you die before their eyes. This is not an adventure movie or a video game. This is reality for children in Iraq. Recently, an international group of researchers went to Iraq to find out how children there are being affected by the possibility of war. Half the children they talked to said they saw no point in living anymore. Even really young kids knew about war and worried about it. 10-year-old Assar had a message for President Bush. He wanted him to know that a lot of Iraqi children will die. You will see it on TV, and then you will regret. Back in elementary school, I was taught to solve problems with other kids, not by hitting or name-calling, but by talking and using I messages. The idea of an I message was to make the other person understand how bad his or her actions made you feel, so that the person would sympathize with you and stop it. Now, I am going to give you an I message, only it's going to be a we message. We, as in all the children in Iraq who are waiting helplessly for something bad to happen. We, as in the children of the world, who don't make any of the decisions but have to suffer all the consequences. We, as in those whose voices are too small and too far away to be heard. We feel scared when we don't even know if we'll live another day. We feel confused because we don't even know what we did wrong.
12-year-old Charlotte Aldebaran speaking last Saturday at a peace rally in Presque Isle, Maine. Thanks to Amy Brown at Pacifica's affiliate WERU for production assistance. Coming up, Dr. Haki Matubuti and his book, Creating Exceptional Black Men. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.